Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. Today we are wrapping up our mini-series on biases. All right, Mark, how are we wrapping this puppy up?
Well, we've got, of course, the last two podcasts, we've gone over four in each. We're going to take care of the last four in this segment. Reference point bias, deception bias, despondency bias, and get even bias. These are the four for the final leg, my friend.
Yeah. Now, when you're looking at these biases, do you have like a severity factor? Do you say, oh my gosh, these are way worse than other ones? Or do you just use this list of 12 to pay very close attention to the content that you create or conversations you have?
You know, it's interesting. It's a great question. I think each of them is strong in their own right, depending upon the investor's experience, right? So let me give you a really good example, okay? So, and I'm going to kind of squirrel on you. You know, I've mentioned to you in the past this position, Zest Labs, Zest Stock. And I need to disclose for compliance purposes that this is not a solicitation or a recommendation to buy Zest Stock. But this stock has been brutal. And it has gone from $20 a share basically to 50 cents over the last several years. And they've been embroiled in this lawsuit with Walmart for the last year. And I believe they're going to win, but there's no guarantees, right? But the stock now at 50 cents, we have been paying very, very close attention to the lawsuit. And we have been able to connect a lot of dots together because, you know, Nepsis, as you know, is ultimate clarity. And it's funny that, and there's a lot of irony here to the extent that Nepsis is ultimate clarity, meaning know what you own and why you own it. And while this stock has been brutal, I know this stock, this company, better than any other position in our portfolio because I've been involved with it since it was private, right? So the point of the story is I'm calling clients and saying, you know, we should do a Roth conversion on this because the stock's at 50 cents. So it's not worth much anymore. And if we're right and the company survives at 50 cents, whether it goes to $5, $10, $50, or $100, it's all going to be tax-free, right?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Pause there. Wait, what about capital gains?
Sorry, Roth and IRA conversions.
Okay.
So Roth conversions. So I've been calling clients and saying we should do a Roth conversion.
Okay.
So it comes out of your IRA, you pay tax at the level of 50 cents, right? And then it goes into the Roth IRA and it grows tax free.
Wow.
Right. So if this stock goes up a lot, right, we're talking about significant capital or significant tax free gains.
Wow.
Yes. So, and I really believe we're going to win. I could be wrong again, but
yeah,
you know, reality is that I don't know. I don't have any, you know, inside scoop on this. We've just done our own research and read a lot of legal documents and yada, yada, yada. So anyway, I had clients literally admit to me that they knew it made sense, but they were so emotional about the stock that they didn't want to pay tax on it because they've already lost so much money. So they've got this emotional bias, right?
Wow.
And that's what's interesting about investors. Reality is that investors get emotional and they have all these different types of biases. Well, you know, not everybody's going to have gone through an experience like Zest, right? So when you talk about what biases are bigger than others, I think they're all really contingent upon the experience an investor's had, right? Because let's be blunt. Let's say someone goes and buys Zest today and tomorrow a lawsuit settled, right? I had this conversation with one of my employees. His son asked if he could go buy the stock. He's in college. He wanted to put a couple $1,000s in it. And, you know, the dad said no. And for multiple reasons, which I won't get into. But the bottom line is we were talking about if he would have and this lawsuit settled, he would make potentially a fair amount of money.
Sure.
So what kind of bias is he going to have the next time he tries to go put a bunch of money that he has into another stock?
Oh, right. Yeah.
So biases are created out of the historical experiences that we've had. And the one thing I do tell my clients, and told these clients who were emotional about doing the Roth conversion, they went ahead and did them anyways, is that you don't pay me to be emotional. And it's extremely important as a portfolio manager, as an investor that I am, like Warren Buffett, I think you can't get emotional about the good decisions or the bad decisions. You have to stick to the process. And if I end up being right, as bad as a stock has been, the irony of this will be know what you own and why you own it. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it turns out fine, right? Hmm. Biases, and in general, if people understand and know these biases, they can look for them when they are making their investment decisions. And this is one of the reasons why I like doing this podcast and talking about these.
Well, let's go ahead and jump in. So which one are we remind us of the four and then jump into one.
Yeah. So one was deception bias, despondency bias, get even bias, and reference point bias. Let's start with reference point bias. I think that's probably a really good one to start based on where we started or what we just talked about. Mm-hmm. So to money managers and advisors alike, it may be the most frustrating bias that investors display. Reference point bias sets expectations of performance around an extreme price level, usually a 52-week high or even an all-time low. Hmm. Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say a money manager buys a stock at 50 per share. The stock proceeds to reach an all-time high of 75, a 50% appreciation from the original purchase price. Something fundamentally changes in the business when the stock is selling at 60 and the money manager sells at a profit of 20% from the cost basis. The client is furious because the portfolio manager did not sell at 75 and deems them incompetent. The client is never satisfied unless each position is bought at a recent low and sold at a recent high. This is a bias that we're experiencing with Zest at 50 cents,
mm-hmm.
right? There are people that are like, this thing's going nowhere. It's going in the toilet, yada, yada, yada. But you pay the money manager to know what you own and why you own it, right? And subsequently, you've had other stocks. Let's go back. I remember doing my radio show one time and a guy called me and said, you know, I owned Intel and I rode Intel from like $30 or $15, some low price, right? All the way up to 100 in 1999 and then rode it all the way back down.
In 01?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the reference point bias, bluntly, Matt, is the reason why we preach sell disciplines. If you haven't listened to the previous podcast, we've talked about my four sell disciplines in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Part of utilizing the sell, and let me say them really quick because it'll help. Number one, if the long-term fundamentals of a business change, you sell it. Number two, you take profit along the way, right? As a stock is moving up to lock in some gains. Number three, you sell it to buy a stronger company, whether its fundamentals are good, bad, or indifferent. We've talked about this before with reinsurance stock. I sold a reinsurance stock that was okay, but during reinsurance stock correction, we sold it, took a loss on it, tax loss harvested, and then bought a reinsurance company, which later got bought by AIG, right? Mm-hmm. So selling a weaker position to buy a stronger position. And then the fourth one is tax loss harvesting, selling losses to offset gains to reduce tax liability. Well, the second one, taking profit along the way, frankly, is a strategically an emotional strategy.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, what it does for the investor, it's a hedge. It means the investor's been right because he took some profit if it goes down. If he's wrong and it still goes higher, he still owns a position in the company. So the emotional predisposition of the investor is offset by taking profit along the way, and it diffuses a reference point bias as opposed to armchair quarterbacking. As you already have heard me say many times, I've never met an armchair quarterback that wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's always easy to be the armchair quarterback. So that reference point bias becomes very important there. And investors are by nature second guessers. They've second guessed me on lots of companies we've invested in, right? People all of a sudden think that a money manager goes nutty and they're way smarter because hindsight's always 20/20.
Well, but okay, so the reference point piece, though, seems to be confusing to me if anybody's really ever looked at the chart since like 1911, right? So is reference point also part of like a recency bias issue, or do they, what is the difference between those two?
So what's happened recently, right? The recency effect bias is a phenomenon that exists not only in investing, but in everyday life where people tend to remember events that just recently occurred.
Okay.
So this, that bias is someone thinking about things that have gone on recently.
And reference point can be over a period of time. It's just you have that point of reference.
Right.
Okay, that's cool.
The stock did X and went down. Right.
Okay.
All right.
What's the next one?
All right. Deception bias.
Okay. Now this sounds nebulous and scary. I mean, really, you're using a very emotionally charged.
It could be. Could be referred to as the delusions of grandeur bias.
All right.
Where we deceive ourselves into thinking that our own skill resulted in us making a good investment choice, when at the end of the day, it was mostly attributable to luck.
Wow.
It is exactly what I just said about the college student buying $2,000 of Zest. Right? If he's right, he was lucky.
Sure.
And at the end of the day, if people have pride and people have egos, and I have met people in the past who have gotten lucky owning the stock. I've gotten lucky. Look, we bought Celgene right in December, got bought in January by Bristol Myers. I never expected that to happen. It was within 30 days or 45 days since I started buying it. That was luck. I mean, at the end of the day, that was luck. Now, it was a fundamentally good position, obviously, because they got bought. But we make our, this is why you have to have, and you have to stick to your buy disciplines and your sell disciplines. And when you look at the negativity around a company like Zest, for example, that's gone down the proverbial toilet over 3 years, here's what nobody's going to be talking about or thinking about on this, Matt. And that is this, that we lowered the cost basis in our clients' portfolios in the stock from around 5.5 down to 3.5. And when it's all said and done, if they win the lawsuit or when the company turns around, no one's going to be thinking about the fact that you reduced the basis by $2 a share, by almost 40%. That's because people have these different types of biases. And the deception bias is very common with people. You know, when you buy something that snaps all of a sudden right away, you know, people think that they're, you know, super smart when they just got lucky.
Well, and there's all sorts of, and I'm air quoting here, systems, right, of the 26-year-old kid who made $1 billion on penny stocks.
Yes.
That's luck, man. I mean, that's that he doesn't have any of the discipline and the clarity and the research and all of the people like you have on your team in order to help you make these decisions.
Correct. It's like people who invested in Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
It's look, there's been lots of those companies out there that aren't around anymore. I mean, this was really prevalent in the 90s, right? When everything was going through the roof and the S&P was trading at 26 times or 29 times forward earnings. You know, there still is that element of luck. And I'll be the first one to tell you, if you're good at what you do as a portfolio manager, you've got to get some luck. You got to get lucky occasionally because it's the process in which you're utilizing to accomplish the investment and planning goals that you set out for yourself. So it is about, as we've talked about in previous podcasts, it is about the process.
All right. So that is reference point and deception. What's next?
The next one is despondency bias.
Okay.
I hate to keep bringing up Zest, but this is a classic case, and probably because depositions and discovery are over in about 3 weeks. So I'm interested to see.
Pretty top of mind with you here, brother.
Yeah. And by the way, by the time this podcast comes out, it may be past October 15th. So it's all history anyway. But anyway, so some of us are predisposed to skepticism and cynicism. we view the cup as being half empty versus half full, assuming perpetual doom. We become despondent as all we see are problems that we can never be fixed, and all hope that a solution to rectify a certain situation becomes forever lost. This bias has been so pervasive over the last 10 years. It really has resulted in the investors based on fear, sitting on the sidelines in cash and looking for guaranteed real losses, waiting for the next shoe to drop. This is so prevalent. I think this is one of the reasons why we continue. I think there's multiple reasons for this, but I believe that as a percentage of GDP and in pure dollars, let's say, that there is more cash today on the sidelines mm-hmm. than ever in history. And the S&P 500 and the Dow are both trading near all-time highs. That is the despondency bias.
Right, what a weird thing, right? I mean, if people deployed this cash,
yep. Oh yeah, the markets would.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I still think. Look, I think it's remnants of mm-hmm. Of the financial crisis.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, people made a big uproar about the repo auction the Feds just did and putting money, flooding the system with money. And everyone's kind of out there freaking out, thinking it's another financial crisis. It had nothing to do with what happened in 2008. So people, you know, these biases that people have, to be really frank with you, is why I believe there is so much power in the name Nepsis. Mm-hmm. And ultimate clarity and investing with clarity. Really, it really should diffuse the biases, but it doesn't always. And, you know, Zest is a great example. I've never had a stock that's done this poorly and has affected portfolios short term as this stock has. But it turns out probably going to be probably my best stock probably mm-hmm. someday too. But the point is that the biases that we have, they inhibit us from accomplishing our investment goals. And that's why at the end of the day, you know, what you pay your advisor is relative. And it doesn't matter. If you believe you're getting the value, then you're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of investors are having a hard time finding value in their advisor because a lot of what that advisor does is cookie cutter.
Well, not only cookie cutter, but it's also, you know, massively on luck. You know, the other piece too is, they don't have the education. They, you know, and a lot of advisors are really fat, dumb, and happy right now because the market keeps going up, right? Yeah. They don't really have to do any work. They do some, you know, they do some reallocation here and there, and most of that's done by a third party anyway. So
and they don't, and, you know, a lot of times they're just moving money around, just move money around, so they think that they're busy.
So they look like they're doing something. Yeah, oh, man, brother.
That's why I don't like TAMPs. That's a separate conversation.
Deception, despondency, reference point. What's our fourth one today?
Get even bias. Now that get even bias is the casino effect in full force. One decides to double down on a stock because they cannot come to the realization that they picked a loser. This becomes the proverbial throwing good money after bad scenario, if you will. I hate to say it, all over Zest again. People would constantly ask me when I was buying the stock, why did you buy it?
Sure.
Why are you buying it? It keeps going down. And I kept saying, because the long-term fundamentals haven't changed.
Mm-hmm.
The long-term fundamentals haven't changed. And if the long-term fundamentals haven't changed and you believe that the long-term fundamentals were correct in the first place, it doesn't mean you're not going to have a loser, but I believe the statistical probability of it being a loser becomes a lot less.
Do you mind if I interject here?
Yeah.
This is the whole idea, though, of Warren Buffett. I mean, Warren Buffett has bought stocks when they're way down. Because I'm buying this thing on sale and, you know, the long-term fundamentals are good. I mean, I know that you don't have the same recognition yet as Warren Buffett. We're personally kind of working on that. But
that would be something, wouldn't it?
That would be awesome. Mark Pearson goes down in history.
My friends would be in absolute disbelief.
Oh, that'd be so awesome.
My wife probably, too.
Yeah.
A conversation.
Here's the deal, though. And I'm going to say this on record. I believe it. It would not surprise me in the least if Mark Pearson went down as the greatest investor of all time. That'd be great.
Well, that's a good hedge, I guess.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah. There you go.
Because first of all, how do you measure that?
Right? I have no idea.
And by the way, you know what? It's interesting. I find it ironic that Warren Buffett is so successful and everybody knows how Warren Buffett manages money, mm-hmm. right? But people don't do it.
Yeah.
People go buy mutual funds mm-hmm. and exchange traded funds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what Warren Buffett does. And, you know, at the end of the day, we have always said that successful investing is about continually over time investing in great businesses, and it's time in the business, mm-hmm. not timing the business. And of course, that's the old that there is the Jeremy Siegel school of thought. Time in a business, or time in the, he calls it time in the stock market, not mm-hmm. timing the stock market. I call it time in a business, not timing a business.
Well, officially, it has been recorded that Matt Halloran said that you were the greatest investor of all time. So legally, I think you're actually allowed to say that now, but that's okay. All right. Here's something. I don't know if I've asked you this through this miniseries, and as you know, my goal in life is to get you, right, is to catch you up in some sort of way where you either say, Matt, I don't know, or you're like, dude, you're right, which, of course, has not happened at all in the right. long time we've been podcasting. How yeah. do you check your biases at the door?
Yeah, you know, I hate to use the Zest reference again because this is the best reference. Again, not a solicitation or recommendation for buying a stock. We do control a sizable position in this company, for full disclosure. My wife in particular, many people thought and felt that I was not checking my emotions at the door on this stock, that I spent a lot of time talking about it. I spent a lot of time researching in it, particularly when I thought something was going awry with the law, with their relationship with Walmart. And it's a longer, complicated story, the whole idea of knowing what you own and why you own it. And there are many who would probably say that I got too close to the stock. My response to that would be no chance. That Nepsis is about ultimate clarity, that it is about knowing what you own and why you own it, and most importantly, sticking to your investment process.
Mm-hmm.
And if the long-term fundamentals haven't changed and you know what you own and why you own it, why, if I thought it was a buy at 5.5 or at 7 or at 8 or at 10, where I was buying it at originally, why wouldn't I be buying it at $1, $1.50, 50 cents or a dollar?
Right.
Right. It's the process of strategic cost averaging into a business over time that enables one to be a successful investor. And people are short-term thinkers. They say they're long-term investors. Have you ever understood why investors say they're long-term investors and they move their money around from one money manager to the next?
I hear it all the time.
Is that really long-term investing? Because what you're not thinking about it as the investor, Matt, is you are selling specific businesses, right? And you're going and you're buying other businesses. And you may be buying some of the same businesses, but the allocation is different. So structurally speaking, I tell people this all the time, there is a statistical probability that every time you move money, that you are putting yourself at a disadvantage to the extent that you're moving money and you don't know what you own and why you own it. And by the way, why should you? I mean, I just did a stress test. You know, we do these stress tests.
Mm-hmm.
I just did one yesterday for an advisor, over 10,000 stocks in the portfolio.
Oh.
How is that invested? And this is a sizable portfolio, right? This is a multi-million dollar portfolio. Like, this guy needs 15 mutual funds and 10,000 stocks in his portfolio. And the wife's biggest concern is, I don't want to lose money. I don't want to lose money. That's the wrong conversation. They don't know what they own and why they own it. So the mentality is, I'm concerned that when this goes down, I'm losing money. But the fact of the matter is, you don't lose money until you sell something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people have a combination of biases, psychological, emotional biases, and most importantly, do not have the clarity to understand what they own and why they own it. And so to finalize to answer your question, I argued with people that I know that I am not being emotional about this stock. I know what I own and why I own it. And I will tell you this, they landed a nice contract with another company outside the US. So the company's viable and going to be around regardless of the lawsuit. Maybe not as big, but the point is, I believe they're going to win the lawsuit, and that's speculation. But if they don't, you know, people will still say I'm an idiot. If they do, people will say I'm a genius. Mm-hmm. How can you say someone's a genius or an idiot on the outcome of a lawsuit, which has nothing to do with company fundamentals? Now, think about that for a minute, right? That's the emotional predisposition of the investor. And my job is to take all the emotion out. If the long-term fundamentals haven't changed, and I kept telling people, frankly, the long-term fundamentals in the company were getting better during this whole process. And the move of the stock was a longer, different conversation. But the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, I have to check my emotions at the door. I cannot be emotionally biased. I've got to. And the reason why I can do that, Matt, is I have complete, unfettered confidence in the process that we use for managing money.
And if somebody wants to have their portfolio stress tested, what is the best way for them to have you guys do that for them?
Thanks for asking. So we do them for portfolios of $250,000 or more. They can go to investwithclarity.com, click on the link for the stress test, and we'll have an advisor get in contact with them and get it done for them.
Wonderful. And we'll make sure that we have that link in the show notes. Closing thoughts, Mr. Pearson.
Stick to the knitting, my friend. Stick to the process.
Well, I think these last three podcasts have been absolutely fascinating. I personally have seen these biases in me, and I'm sure that our listeners have too. Making sure that you truly understand what you own and why you own it, it makes these biases not go away, but at least you can control them because you understand the core reasons of what's in your portfolio. When you own 10,000 stocks, there's no way that you're ever going to truly understand what they are, why you own them, and really, how do you even track all of that? How do you track 10,000 stocks? That's like a whole freaking market. So anyway.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right. We'll make sure that everybody has links to the website. And Mark, thanks very much for your thought leadership again today.
Thank you, sir. Always good to be with you.
If you have not subscribed, make sure you click that subscribe now below. That way, every time Mark comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. And if you know anybody who has experienced any of these biases or are experiencing them now, make sure you share all three of these podcasts with your friends and family to make sure that you can truly help them know what they own and why they own it. So for everybody at Nepsis, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.